in this country, in the world, now when you look at conflict, we're kind of stuck on polarization that happens between people, and the tools that are used to deal with that polarization are usually about pressure, about threats of violence, and actually even violence. And in some ways, the traditional method of dealing with conflict, which is comes from the courts, is highly coercive. Somebody from the outside actually makes a decision for you about what's going to happen with your life.
The Center for Understanding and Conflict welcomes you to The Other Chair, a monthly podcast exploring the dynamics of conflict and how to bring the human issues to the table. Together with our guests, we explore how the power of understanding each other can lead to better solutions for people on both sides of an issue. We will also share tips for managing your own mediation practice, approaching conflict in the professional world, and ways to apply our understanding-based model in your personal life. Hello to our listeners. Our guest today is Gary Friedman, founder of the Center for Understanding and Conflict. Hello, Gary. Could you start by giving us a brief overview? What is the Center for Understanding and Conflict?
The center is really a place where we're trying to further the goal of bringing our model of mediation and conflict resolution to as broad an audience as we can. And it's based on, and it's called the understanding model because we feel like the normal way in which people think about conflict is that it gets resolved through coercion. And we think coercion is, while it's useful, it's far inferior to the possibilities of the power of understanding. If you bring that to a conflict, the power of understanding has the ability to empower people that are in conflict, and also to be able to use that as the base for the decisions that they're making when they're fighting with each other, upset with each other, or whatever it is that's brought them to mediation or any other kind of conflict resolver. So our focus is on the conflict professionals. So that's lawyers, mediators, people in organizations, anybody actually who wants to use the skills of finding a kind of alternative way of dealing with conflict using the power of understanding, using that to kind of power them through to results that we think are actually much more likely to respond to what people really care about, rather than when they're pushed around and having to operate under the kind of the stress of that.
I know you mentioned, you just gave kind of a brief overview of the understanding-based model. And on the website, there is a lot of information, but I struggled as somebody coming to it from outside of the organization to simply understand in its purest sense, you know, what the understanding-based model is and why it is different or more ideal than the traditional method of resolving conflict.
The best way I think to put this is that we are in this country, in the world, now when you look at conflict, we're kind of stuck on polarization that happens between people, and the tools that are used to deal with that polarization are usually about pressure, about threats of violence, and actually even violence. And in some ways, the traditional method of dealing with conflict, which is comes from the courts, is highly coercive. Somebody from the outside actually makes a decision for you about what's going to happen with your life. And so mediation is an alternative to having somebody from the outside make a decision for you. And the understanding model is an alternative to what's now become traditional mediation. And traditional mediation uses the same kinds of pressures, threats, escalation, only the mediators or the conflict professionals turn up the heat on the participants to get them to some kind of compromise or some kind of deal. That's the way the legal system works. That's the way a lot of systems work within companies. It's the way that it works between parents and kids. It's turn up the heat and then we'll be able to find some kind of resolution. And this is actually just the opposite. It's turn down the heat, find out what people really care about underlying the dispute, because I think if we can kind of investigate what's happening when people disagree with each other, what we can find, especially if they're very upset, We can find out what they really care about underneath that position they've taken, or underneath their expression of their upset with the other person. And the hope is that if we can use the power of understanding, that people can understand what they care about and also understand what the other person or other people care about. And we can then put them side by side and together find a solution that takes both into account, so that neither of them has to give up anything that's important to them in order to be able to reach a resolution. And if people can feel like the result of their conflict resolution is a result that takes into account what they really care about, it's much more likely to be a more stable, long-lasting, more committed solution than one that comes from the outside through pressure or coercion.
Conflict manifests itself in many ways in our personal lives, for professionals in the workplace and for practitioners who have made a career bringing together parties in conflict through mediation practice. Each month, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts live webinars with featured guests discussing best practices and sharing their experiences for tackling conflict using the understanding-based model. When you first began founding this organization, and I'm sure that that came after, do you have an example of a particular circumstance that you can talk about that sparked this idea or this path that you began upon that led to creating this model and forming this organization? What was the catalyst for you?
As a trial lawyer, I was in court every day for years, and I became dissatisfied with the way the legal system worked. And what I found was that even when I won as a trial lawyer, clients were often disappointed or dissatisfied with what happened. And so after 5 years of that, I pulled out. And I thought, I'm done. I don't want to be a part of that. And I noticed the impact it was having on me and my personal life, as well as my professional life. And so when I quit, I was on the East Coast and I moved to the West Coast, came out with my little red MG in 1975 with my dog, and had no idea what I was going to do. And when I got here, I became very interested in, and I had been interested a little bit, in what happens to people inside them and what was happening inside me in my life. I was full of turmoil. So I actually started studying different approaches to becoming more familiar with knowing myself. And I went into a psychology training program, and there I met Jack Himmelstein, who actually had a similar impulse. He was teaching at Columbia, and he'd been a lawyer that was responsible for the at least cessation for a while of the death penalty, as teaching at Columbia. And so we recognized each other as having the same impulse, that we really felt like there must be another way. At first I thought the problem was with me. And then I started realizing the problem actually was with the system, and the system kind of dehumanized people, disempowered them. And so out of that, Jack and I had a conversation. I said, let's see if we can change the legal profession. And Jack said, well, if you want to do that, we better deal with law school first, because that's where the problem starts. So together we got a grant from the National Institute of Mental Health for $500,000 in 1976 with the idea to see if we could bring what we called then humanistic educational psychology to the teaching of law. And into that, 2 years into that 5-year program, the evaluators came to us and they said, hey, how it looks like the teachers are really finding this incredibly valuable, but what difference is this going to make? How is this going to change the way law is practiced? And the answer was, we don't know. I said, well, if you want to keep being funded, you better find out. And that's when I decided to hang a shingle out here by myself in California. As an experiment to see if I could be a different kind of lawyer that didn't operate from traditional assumptions about conflict and about how humans behave in conflict and how lawyers behave. And from that became an experiment where I was basically known as a kind of weird lawyer. And very quickly, people started coming to me and because they wanted something different. They felt disempowered by lawyers. And they felt like lawyers made situations worse. So into that, a couple of people that I knew came to see me and they said, can you help us? We've got this problem. We want to get divorced. And I said, well, you know, yeah, I can be the lawyer for one of you. And then the other person, you can be your own lawyer. And then I can help you negotiate. And the wife turned to me and she said, well, you just sound like all the rest of them. Why can't you just be in the middle and as a lawyer, bring whatever skills that you have to kind of help us find our way through this? And I said, well, you know, that's an interesting question. I have no idea what the answer to it was. So I said, you know, come back in a week. I thought about it. I talked to Jack. I said, here's an experiment. What do you think? And he said, let's try it. So he was in New York. I was in California. And the people came back and I said, I actually have no idea how to do this, but I'm interested. And it feels to me like I ought to be able to help you be not to be on one side against the other side, but to be in the middle and see if I can help you find a way through this together. And that was the beginning of it. And, you know, we kind of stumbled our way through and very quickly my practice built because there was so much anger that people had and disappointment they had with the legal system. And so this really started out as basically for lawyers. It was called the Center for Mediation and Law because we decided to start teaching it after I was doing it for a bit. And then over time, we realized, well, this wasn't just for mediators and it wasn't just for lawyers. It's actually what we were discovering was a whole different way of thinking about conflict and operating as conflict professionals to see if we could help people in a very different way than they were used to. And so that's when we started broadening our teaching to include, first therapists and then other people from businesses. And also it was something where we felt like it's not just about mediation. It's about anybody who's trying to help somebody who's in conflict using these tools that we've developed, which really change the game in terms of what how people think traditionally about this. So, for example, one big way that we really change things is, and this happens if you think about any conflicts you've been involved in or you're trying to help anybody, that one, we have six principles that we work from. The second one is called maximizing responsibility for participation in the process. So what that meant was, as lawyers and as professionals, we often felt we were responsible for whether the people reached a deal or not. And we flipped that on its head and we said, no, actually, what really makes more sense is, why shouldn't the people who created the problem, who know best what's important to them in their lives, who are going to have to live with the solution, why shouldn't they be the active participants and shoulder as much responsibility as they can for not only participating in the process, but also determining what the outcome was? And so that was revolutionary. It might not sound like it if you're not from a law background, but for many lawyers, it was a huge relief to not feel like it was all on them and that it was really on the parties, because it's really the parties that have the best possibility of knowing what's going to make sense to them and what will actually be something they're willing to be committed to and live with. So we have a number of other principles besides using the power of understanding, not coercion, maximizing responsibility of the parties. But those all became the tools and the kind of the underlying premises and the underlying principles that we operate from in order to try to shift from a traditional idea of what conflict is to something that's a real alternative.
Throughout the year, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts in-depth, basic, and advanced certificate programs designed to train you to become effective mediators and conflict resolution professionals centered in the understanding-based model. Our training programs have been the gold standard in alternative dispute resolution for 40 years and is popular within the legal community with human resource professionals, ombudsmen, and corporate workplace mediation clients.
I'd like to hear a little bit more. I have a good understanding, I assume, on how this model affects the legal profession and professional mediators as a profession. But in helping to try to identify ways to get the word out to more people who can benefit, I'd like to hear more about a little more detail about the professional applications. I know that you mentioned therapists and businesses, and then also any insight or specifics you can give on how this could be applied in someone's personal life or in their not exactly, it's not, maybe they're not a mediator in a professional capacity, but there are ways that it can be applied in conflict resolution outside of the professional sphere.
Yeah. So let's take something. Are you married?
I am.
Do you have kids?
No.
It's a power relationship between the parents and the kids. And the parents are the ones that are the bosses, and they use their authority as parents, which is a good thing to be able to raise the kids. The problem is, though, when there's a conflict between parent and child, and the parent uses the authority, what happens is it has this consequence often to kind of squash the kid and also make them not a participant. Using authority in that kind of way might give a short-term result where the kid does what the parent wants him to, but what's lost is what's the kid's side of it, and using understanding rather than the power to say, no, I have the authority, this is what you're going to do. We say, no, look, we have a problem. We disagree with each other. Let's see if we can have a different kind of conversation than where I just say, this is what you're going to do. So can we have a conversation where actually we each try to understand each other and see if we can have a different way of communicating about this problem, and see if from that we might find a different kind of solution, or it maybe be a similar solution, but it's going to be one where we're both going to be participants and make decisions together rather than my making the decision for you about what's going to happen with your life. So that's an example that's just there every day, all the time. And then when we move into corporate setting, for example, I assume you've worked for businesses.
I have, for a long time.
There may be HR departments, mm-hmm. And you go to the HR person, and they basically are the authority. If there's a problem between people in the company, the HR person kind of look to them, and they're kind of like a little judge, and they make the decision about what's going to happen. Or they turn up the heat, or they make a recommendation, but they see themselves and the people in the company see them as the authority. But what happens if we change the game and the HR person becomes, or the HR person says, within this company, we have people who are trained mediators. And their job is to see if they can help you find a way through the conflict rather than leave it up to me to decide what's going to happen, your fate. Let's see if we can keep the power. Just because you disagree with each other doesn't mean you should be disempowered from participating in trying to figure out what the result of the problem should be. So that's a kind of, and it's not going to have repercussions in the company because it's not going to be reported out. So that's a very revolutionary way for a lot of companies to think about this. And now we're getting more and more of these, you know, we have Intel and we have SAP and a lot of huge companies that now have mediators that we've been training who are operating from this very different premise of not using the authority of even the rules of the business to shove results down people's throats. And of course, what this requires, it's not like, okay, we're not going to eliminate blame. And of course, the natural responses we have when we're in conflict, we want right, wrong, that framework. The problem with the right, wrong framework is natural. It's inevitable and it makes sense, but it's limited. if we stay inside the framework of right and wrong or blame and fight back against the blame, we often either get stuck or somebody gives up or gives in. And so in our model, we really think differently about that. We think about the difference between not just what the problem is, and this is really key to our approach, but how people talk about the problem makes a huge difference. If you can talk about the problem in a different way, you have a much, which we call the how, you have a much better chance of finding a result that fits with your own sense of what you think is right and how you want to be in relationship to the person you're in conflict with. So that's an example in the corporate world. And then you can kind of take it out to all kinds of situations, real estate, neighborhoods. We've had a lot of experience doing stuff, you know, just contracts that people have with each other. a sad experiment with all of this was about 7 or 8 years ago. I decided to run for office and got elected, unfortunately, as the chair of our little community. And I thought I'd bring this this approach to dealing with problems in the neighborhood. We have water, we have electricity, we have all kinds of stuff we have to deal with. And I thought, well, I'll just bring my mediation approach to this. But what happened was I found I got caught because I wanted to make change. And so I moved into my old trial lawyer, came roaring back. And soon I was kind of hated by the old guard of the community. And I realized I'd kind of lost myself and I had gotten caught. So it's easy to say all this stuff. It's hard to do it and live it. And a lot of what we think is really underlying our model is that it's for people about not just their professional lives, but their personal lives. And so we like to think that we walk our talk. And that when we behave in putting together programs and offering programs in the same way we're trying to teach people to deal with within the conflict system that we're teaching. And so that's one of the things that makes it particularly challenging for us as teachers to be able to be congruent in the way we teach and the how of our teaching with what we're teaching.
This podcast is supported by our CUC Connect members, whose yearly membership includes free attendance to our live monthly webinars, 12 additional featured recordings of past training events, discounts to our basic and advanced training programs, and support from our network of certified trainers for continued professional development. Consider joining CUC Connect today and dive deeper into the understanding-based model. I noticed that there were some literature referenced on the website that looks like it's referencing some Eastern philosophy. What is the relationship between Eastern philosophy and the understanding-based model, if any?
Yeah, I think this has become something that's been important just in the last 20 years. There's a guy named Norman Fisher who lives down the street from me, and I live about a 2-3 minute drive from a Zen Buddhist center, and where it's a meditation center, and I've been interested in meditation for the last 35 years, and so over time, as I've gotten involved with them, they've hired me to kind of teach them about how to deal differently with conflict within the people living within the community, and I've done a lot of stuff there. But Norman, who is the head of it, got very interested, and he came to one of our programs, and it was very exciting because he was interested in understanding what we're trying to do. And at the end of it, I said, you know, Norman, this is really, I'm so glad you're interested in this, because the one thing, that most important thing that we teach, I don't know how to teach. That I want mediators to, and that is to have how to have access to what's happening inside them when they're working with people trying to help them. And we know that that's really critical to their success as mediators, as lawyers, as conflict resolvers, as therapists, as whoever they are. And he said, I think we can teach that. And so that's began the last 20 years where Norman has been working with us, and we've been doing these programs called Skippy or Inside Out programs. And my last book was called Inside Out, How Conflict Professionals Can Use Self-Reflection to Help Their Clients. And so this is actually what I'm teaching now all over the world. I'm about to go to Italy and Germany and France and do a whole number of those programs in Spain. And it's about learning, you know, the biggest problem that what happens with among conflict professionals is that they have judgments about the people they're trying to help. And then they feel the judgments and then they suppress them. So what we've learned from the Skippy programs is, instead of pushing those feelings away, the negative feelings you have toward people, you actually go toward them. And it turns out if you go toward them and you understand them, that's often the key to not only restoring the relationship between you and the people you're trying to help, but actually opens the door between them. And so this is really our approach to meditation, and many self-reflective exercises have become a staple of all the teaching that we do now. And is actually one of the things that's, if not unique about our approach, rather unusual, and certainly crosses the old lines of how people think about conflict resolvers. You're supposed to keep your distance as a neutral. Our idea is, instead of keeping your distance, you get in there with them and you feel with them, and you notice what's happening with you. And if you have a problem with them, you work it through inside you to be able to come closer to them so that you can be helpful.
There's a great deal of conflict in our society. Some would argue there always have been. Others would argue the last, let's say, 10 years or less have made very clear the breadth of that conflict. And for some people who are not involved in mediation profession or legal capacity, it can seem insurmountable to try to bridge those gaps. Can you articulate simply to someone who may be struggling with that how the key principles of the understanding-based model can help them bridge the gaps and overcome those to mend?
Yeah. Visions? The most important thing is that you have to want to do it. If you don't want to do it, and or the other person doesn't want to do it, it's not going to work. So having a motivation to do it is absolutely critical. With motivation to do it, many things are possible. Without motivation on the part of both people, forget it. So that's real, and that's hard, and it's really poignant, and it's really challenging, and it's kind of at the heart of so much of what's going on in terms of politics and race. So it all has to start with, are you interested in having a conversation with somebody where you're going to further your understanding? So I always say there are three tests of whether any conversation is worth having. One, and they're all based on understanding. Do you come out of the conversation understanding anything more about the other person? Do you come out of the conversation about understanding anything more about yourself? And do you come out of the conversation understanding anything more about the situation? Any one of those three makes it a good enough conversation, so maybe you'll have another. You're not going to, go from 0 to 100. In 10 minutes or an hour in one conversation with these deep-seated and very deep distrust that's there. But it's about bringing our humanness to the conversation and our vulnerability. It's our vulnerability that's our strength and makes it real. And when we have and can show our vulnerability and feel it, turns out that vulnerability is actually makes us feel more powerful than exercising the kinds of powers that we're used to that are kind of external. So that's really kind of at the core of any kind of conversation that we might be able to have, or that we might be able to help other people have. Because even as no matter how good we think we are as mediators, if both parties aren't interested, it's a non-starter. It's kind of an oxymoron. People think, oh, mediation's so great. Judges order people to mediation. Well, it's just exactly the opposite of what we think makes sense. So when people come to us, and they say, you know, I was sent by the judge, we say, well, it was good enough to get you in the office that you were sent by the judge. It's not going to be enough to keep you here. There have to be real reasons that you have to want to be able to deal with this person in a different way. Do you have them? Can we talk about that? And I'm not going to be a judge, and I'm not going to be on one side or the other side. Well, what are you going to do? Well, what I'm going to do is see if I can help you come away with this with a deeper understanding of yourselves, each other, the situation, and see if from that we can find a solution that works for both of you. Are you interested? Would you like to do that? No, I would, but the other person wouldn't. Well, so you see it as impossible, right? But what if it were possible? And we try to feed, and especially when you look at the social norms right now, it's all so escalated. It looks like it's not possible, but we start to feed possibility. So if we can have a moment with this person where things change a bit, that's a positive step. I don't know if you're a music fan. You know Joni Mitchell's stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. What happened a couple of days ago?
No.
She was at the Newport Folk Festival, and she had a brain aneurysm, 2015, and she lost the ability to talk and walk, but she's been working on it. And so 2 days ago at the Newport Folk Festival, she sang. You should watch this on YouTube. You'll just start crying. She just brought herself back to this, and it was this beautiful moment of, in the face of all the shit that's happening in the world, this kind of glorious moment where it was Joni Mitchell and we were all, for 1 minute, feeling possibility in the face of impossibility.
Thank you to today's guest for being with us today, and to our CUC Connect members, whose support enables the Center for Understanding and Conflict to bring new perspectives in the field of conflict resolution and mediation to you, our listener, in each new episode. You can find out more about today's episode, along with full interviews and additional information about conflict resolution and mediation using the understanding-based model at www.understandinginconflict.org.